AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When I write y'all, all across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer Cali. So if you're keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment.
Jill, you know what it is. Another episode of Gangsta Chronicles. I'm with the homie.
Vic Steele. Man, hey, this has been a long time. You just came back from Europe, trouncing all over Europe, man, out there killing the shows. I saw everything was sold out all the time.
Yeah, man, it's all good, man. Tell people they treat us a little differently overseas, man. Seem like you get a little more respect overseas, and people really appreciate where you come from. Mm-hmm. You know, how long you've been putting in work trying to represent whatever form of hip-hop you may call your shit. you know, just to be able to go outside of the states and see that at least what I've been able to do is greatly appreciated. When you got sold out shows in different countries and people can barely speak English, but they know your motherfucking songs word for word. That's just appreciation. You feel me?
Yeah, it's appreciated for sure, man. I noticed that too when I went over to Japan. Over in Japan, you get Michael Jackson treatment. England, you get Michael Jackson treatment. Germany, you get Michael Jackson treatment. And over here, it's kind of just like, oh, what's up, man? Because everybody over here is a rapper. Everybody over here got a podcast. Everybody over here actor. Everybody got something going on. But it's all good, though. Ain't you a legend, man?
I think it's just different levels of, you know, it's a little difficult, you know, in some places. It all just depends on how people received you when it comes to over here, you know. We got a lot of different artists, a lot of different territories and boundaries and shit like that. So a lot of that tends to play a part in your acceptance from a lot of niggas, you know, which is unfortunate because I never got into music to try to glorify a certain aspect of where I came from or what we was banging or whatever, you know. Niggas knew that because we was doing that before we started rapping. It wasn't like a lot of trendy shit today where, you know, it's cool to gang bang now. It's cool to,
it's a fad now.
Know, it's cool to claim the hood and territories and shit, you know. Today shit, I could grow up in fucking Pittsburgh and say I'm from a neighborhood in Compton, you know. That's how it works today, which is, you know, no disrespect because a lot of niggas died and got locked away for trying to be true to the hood life. But
neighborhood,
you know, it's a give and take. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you come from the streets and you are the artist. Like I said, I never got into it to glorify one side. I was just making music because niggas was struggling. You feel me?
Yeah.
That was Crips, Bloods, Essays, niggas in Texas, New York, Chicago, St. Louis. That's what I made music for because I looked at it like shit.
It's almost like this, you know, which is a good segue into introducing tonight's guest. He's the program director from 1997. From 1997 on up to 2005, 2006. At one of the biggest, it was the number one radio station in the country at his time under his regime. And I think it was Power 106 was number one and Hot 97 was number two.
Well, I mean, both were number one in their respective markets, but I oversaw Power 106, and then I spent a lot of time at Hot 97, and then I had 32 stations in the middle.
That's right. You were in charge of Hot 97 for a minute, too, huh?
Yep.
At a time,
after the Little Kim shooting, they called me in to calm the shit down.
And, that, you know, he shouldn't need an introduction, but this is Damian Young, and he's pretty much the one that's responsible for bringing gangster rap to the rhythmic format. Because you came right in during the time when the whole Death Row thing jumped off.
Oh, yeah.
Whole Death Row thing jumped off. And that's why when I was asking Aid if he had met you, because I just knew you knew him.
We never met before.
I just knew him.
Nice to finally meet you, sir.
All day.
Because I just knew, I said at that time, Aid was like, you know, as far as gangster rap go, Aid was like, you know, God out here.
Oh, I definitely knew who Aid was. It's just they never worked the records to us.
Yeah, that's maybe some of that disrespect you was talking about. I said, and I thought about it. I said, Eight didn't have a lot of records on Power.
I didn't have a lot of records on the radio, period. Yeah. You know, not that I didn't see radio as a valuable tool. I never geared my music towards radio. And that goes back to when I started rapping in the garage with the homie making tapes, you know. I always saw music as a struggle. Everybody did different shit. You get me? We had the niggas who would get you in the party and shake you up. We had the motherfuckers who, you know, had the danceable tunes and all of that. I've always considered my music the score for the neighborhood. So, you know, all those stories and all those shit that we saw, I wanted to put a sinister soundtrack to that shit. That's why, I don't know, I never thought about making club-friendly songs or songs that Epic could go, you know, pursue on the radio or whatever. I never thought of it. And then the crazy shit about it was the label never asked me to do that type of shit.
They didn't have to. You got to think about it.
They never asked me for radio-friendly songs.
Did you know how valuable you were to the Epic system? Think about this. They was going to get a gold or platinum album out of you every year and didn't have to spend no money on radio.
That's honestly, crazy. I was probably a write-off to Epic because, I mean, shit, Epic had Michael Jackson at the time. They had Pearl Jam.
Oh, yeah.
They had Sade. You know, they...
Yeah, I just thought about cool that. Did you never try to get a record with Sade?
Cool J, I mean, Epic Records, man, they...
They were distributing Def Jam at the time, weren't they?
Sony?
Yeah,
Sony was distributing, but like me at Epic, I mean... Who could you, like, again, they had, at the time when I signed to Epic Records, they had Michael Jackson, who had just came off of Thriller. Mm-hmm. They had Pearl Jam, who was one of the biggest motherfucking rock bands at the time. And they had Sade. So.
And MC8, that's a cold roster.
It was a write-off, nigga. Shit, I wasn't no significant. I didn't get no... Epic didn't know what to do with rap music back then. They had no idea what to do with it because, like I said, when you look at those three artists, nigga, they were selling the label. You get me? So that it was one of those things where they was like, man, we got some money to fuck off or throw away. Everybody doing this rap thing right now, so fuck it. Let's go grab us up some artists. You know,
but
every artist that they had up until I came along, they didn't know what the fuck to do with.
And you was there for 10 years, right?
I was at Epic from, I want to say about 91, 92, till about 97.
See, and I came in at 97.
Yeah, you came in 97, so yeah.
I left Epic right at the, like you said, the height of Death Row and whatever. But I left Epic because everybody got fired. They brought in a gang of new motherfuckers. I think they had brought in Ron Sweeney and a couple of motherfuckers, and they didn't know what they was doing beforehand. So I just decided to say, fuck it. And did my last record, and that was it.
Yeah, before we go into this conversation with my man, the Mizzle, because we got a lot to talk about, bro. We got to dig in the trash can a little bit and talk about the news, the goings on, and the musings of what's going on in the internet land right now. You know, when I was on my way up here, my phone was blowing up. People was telling me, man, did you see the stuff with Diddy? You know, did you see the stuff that's going on with Diddy, man? And I said, wow. Now they don't drug Meek Mill's all up in this mess, man. Wow. And talking about that him, Usher, and they got a thing to where some dude is suing them for molesting them. If I'm not mistaken, it's just like, man.
Yeah, I have no idea what's
yeah, going on. I know you don't do
I
it.
I try to.
I believe a motherfucker is innocent until proven guilty. So I'm just
And I'm with all of that shit too, but I've learned right now to just stay the fuck off my phone when it comes to looking for, you know, because Man, when I was in overseas, man,
they don't do all that over there, do they?
Our motherfuckers wasn't on their phone and worried about Instagram and social media and all that shit. And it just, you know, I got time to not have to fuck with it because everybody knew I was overseas on tour. Mm-hmm. So it's just crazy how every time you can go on your phone, it's just some shit. Yeah. That's what kind of fucked me up and wore me down because it's just like everybody is on some shit, man. Just like, and it, like, no bullshit. Like, everybody is on some shit to where I be trying to look for a little sense of normalcy with motherfuckers. Like, is a nigga just gonna be normal today? Can a nigga wake up today and not see this nigga talk about this nigga or this nigga expose this nigga or this done happen or that like?
Man, I'm gonna tell you the saddest part about it, man. Like the whole thing with Benzino, you had people over there.
You see what I'm saying? Listen, it's just shit, man. It's just a gag. It's shit.
I'm gonna say there was this right. The stuff with Benzino, this grown man is on there crying and people think this is a joke. I'm like, man, a lot of these dudes got mental stuff going on, man. They need some help. Like my boy, my man Benzino, shout out to Benzino. He a friend of the show. He's been on here before. You know, you had Benzino, you had the stuff with Kodak.
I talked to Benzino not even like maybe a month ago.
He cool dude.
Like, you know, so that, I mean, not like whatever, but it's just like, it's just a gang of shit, man. And I don't know, like, the end game is it for? Is it for money? Is it for popularity? Is it to boost your status?
You know what I think, though, bro? Me and you, now, we come in here and we do this show faithfully. Every week, you've always shown up, unless it's just like an act of God. That's the only way we ain't here, right?
Right.
We just had us some time off because we always take time off from the last season. This season, the people, you know, hitting me up online, when the show coming back, it's like, damn, I'm not a machine. I'm an actual human being. Me and Aid are human beings. We need a break sometimes.
Hell yeah. You know, shit, I was going to come in last week. I was fresh off the plane.
Man.
I was going to come in, but you know, you got to take a little time.
Yeah, you know, because I was on my deathbed last week, dog. I was sick as a dog, you know? So it's like you look at this, and this is what I want to go back to segue into this. Today, in today's market, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, prior to the show starting, everybody has a podcast nowadays.
It's all for clicks.
Yeah, everybody was starting to rap around 97. Rapping to me felt like a thing that was special. Everybody didn't try to do it back in the day. You know, it wasn't a million people rapping. But then once people saw that there was some monetary value in becoming a rapper, you had everybody wanted to become a rapper. I ain't gonna say an MC because an MC is MC. You was right. MC8. Hence your name, MC8. You know, you were MC, you were a storyteller.
Yeah, we took pride in creating stories, you know, from youth life or just from what the shit we seen as kids, because shit was valued differently when I grew up, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. Times were different. Was it gang banging and shit? Yeah. Was it niggas selling dope and going to jail and shit? Yeah, but Man, these cameras and these phones and these social media stages, man, have given, like you said, like, it used to be like, nigga, I knew I wasn't finna be no basketball player. You get me? Mm-hmm. But now you can't do that. You feel me? Now, today, you got 1,000 motherfuckers finna sign their kids up for basketball knowing damn well niggas shouldn't be playing basketball.
And they doing it for the wrong reasons.
You get me? Mm-hmm. Fuck it. All you gotta do is put in a motherfucking laptop, a couple of little speakers, and a microphone in the corner in your kitchen. Everybody's a rapper now. You get me? Fuck it. I'm gonna find a beat program on fucking internet and start doing some 1-2-1-2 beats. Everybody a producer now. Like, I knew what position to play. I knew I could MC, but nigga, I ain't finna get up there and try to DJ just because we got speakers here and, I mean, turntables and shit. And I'm, nigga, fuck that. I'm DJ 8 now. Nigga, I couldn't motherfucking scratch a record or transform or do none of that shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna fake the funk to do, you get me? I'm gonna play my position. Today, motherfuckers don't know that. Like I tell you every time we get on here, some people have, people today have a problem with being just normal.
Being normal.
I got a problem with that. I fuck that. I can't be, nigga, I'm finna be the next this, next that, or next that. And this, when you could just be your motherfucking self.
And
period.
This man, when he came in, he pretty much, because you got to remember, prior to Mr. Remember we was clowning, we was having fun with the lines on top of the dun, 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 dun. Everything sounded like a Planet Rock beat.
Everything was techno for us.
Everything was techno. And this man came in, and it started getting a little gangster. So we gonna go from the beginning, Miz. But I gotta talk, because Power was such a big part of your life, right? When did you come in and decide it was time to shake shit up?
The second I walked in the door.
What did you see going on? Because LA had, you know, 8 had his own theory about LA radio. He said, man, it was what?
Well, I mean, it was wide open. Like, I was always somebody who just loved music. So I loved rap music. So I loved Dr. Dre, The Chronic. I loved, Snoop Dogg. I loved all of Eazy-E. I'd drive up and listen to Julio G and K-Day, you know, and Tony G and the Mixmasters and, you know, all Battle Cat and all of those guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I got there, that was my goal, was to emulate K-Day, but bring it back on that level and make hip hop the number one format in the world. Because they just said we couldn't do that. So I was just like, fuck you, of course we could. You know, yeah. Because if you go anywhere, you'd hear rap in the streets. Like, for instance, you know, when I first played Ain't No Fun in Morning Drive, people had a coronary. You know what I mean? The management freaked out. So I literally had to put it in our research to show them that it would test more than our current records.
And that was a light record to me. You know, even though they subject matter, you know, it ain't no fun if the homies can't have none.
Yeah.
But that was a fun record. That's like a record that should have been on the radio to me.
Well, but the thing was, it wasn't really censorable. You know what I mean? Like, even when you muted the stuff, you knew what they were saying.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, I had some barriers to overcome, but I proved them each time. And like, for instance, when I put Dre and Snoop together for 2001, it wasn't for 2001. It was because I wanted to see the show. So we did it in Hawaii and did a whole contest around it so that literally I could see the show.
That's dope, man. So you, you just, know what I mean? So you just pretty much got to have your own party. Like, so you said, I'm going to do this. So you just like you.
Power was my personality. Sorry to interrupt.
It's all good. Yep. So you just like you programming your own playlist on the iPhone right now. You said, I want to see this and this. Let's put this together.
If you let the ultimate rap fan into a building and said, you have a transmitter, that's what it was.
That's what it was. So tell me, so when you first came in, you said you started right off the rip, like, we go shake some stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had this monster of a record label, which was Death Row. Did you hear about the ass whoopings and everything that was going on?
Oh, hell yeah. I was friends with Johnny J. Johnny J was my first mentor in production.
Yeah, rest in peace, Johnny J.
Yeah, rest in peace, Johnny J. And Ronnie King. Shout out to Ronnie King. And, you know, those were like the first people that I met when I came to L.A. So, you know, it was right as, you know, all that was going on. And Johnny actually gave me Unconditional Love by Tupac. And it was exclusive content for us, but it made Death Row a little mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I ended up getting notes on my car and all this stuff, but I ended up meeting Suge, and I just found out if you treat people with respect, you'll get respect, so that was it.
Now, your first interaction with Suge, how was that? Because I'm pretty sure you're the radio dude, so I'm pretty sure he was treating you nice, and just for the record, Suge wasn't out here whooping on everybody.
No.
Like some of that stuff was kind of blew up. He was whooping some ass, but everybody wasn't getting their ass whooped on.
Well, he had just gotten out of jail, And the Anaheim Police Department came to me. We had a powerhouse. And they came to me and they said, we're going to shut your powerhouse down. We hear Suge Knight's coming. Because I had Snoop. I had Corrupt. I had Nate. I had, you know, I mean, I had everybody that used to be on his label. So they said, you know, we're going to shut it down. I said, well, why doesn't somebody just call him and invite him? Then we'll know where he's at. Mm-hmm. And they said, great, go ahead. And I was like, me? And so I ended up calling Death Row. And the first time I called, I remember Cedric, who picked up the phone, hung up on me. Didn't believe it was me from Power calling for Suge. And then I called back again, and he's like, dude, people just don't call here for Suge a lot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's at home. So Suge got on the phone, and I said, yo, I hear you're coming to Powerhouse. And he said, what's Powerhouse? And I said, come on, man, don't fuck with me. And he was just like, oh, okay, you know, you're funny, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, yeah, so come be my guest. Come to my suite and all this kind of stuff. He's like, wow, no one's ever really invited me to something.
That's what it is. Sometimes that's all it takes. Because I'm going to tell you something.
And he was cool as shit. He partied in the thing and had a blast. And I'll tell you the funny thing, though, is the next morning, I didn't realize that he had all those Compton police officers with him. You know what I mean? Like, during that era. Mm-hmm. So the next morning, Sunday morning, there was a knock at my door, and I walked downstairs. I opened the door, and there's a basket there with a bottle of champagne and all this kind of shit, and it said, with compliments, Suge Knight. I never give that motherfucker my address. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
But he obviously, see, with Suge, you never know. It could be twofold.
Yeah.
He was just showing you he appreciated you, but in the same token, he'd let you know, I could find your ass if need be, so you better keep this nice guy stuff going on.
But he always was, you know what, he never gave me an excuse. I was always honest with him. You know what I mean? If there was a record he wanted to play, he'd say, come up. You know, one time I remember he wanted to come up and play the Crooked Eye single. And I said, well, if I tell the mixers that you're coming, they're not going to show up. So we surprised the mixers. And when he walked in, they all hit the back wall. Like, they all got up and were, I'm like, he's not going to kill you. Like,
see, that's kind of like, you know.
And Jimmy Steele, the program director, by the way, when he was smoking a cigar in there, I said, Suge, you can't smoke in here. And he put the thing out. He's like, I'm sorry, Miz. And my program director literally shit himself. Like, I mean, he was just like, dude, what are you into? How are you asking Suge to put a cigar?
But you know, that's the thing, though, man. And this is what I'm going to say about that. You can't do your business, make black culture your business, but be scared to deal with the people.
Well, that's because, you know, the image that, you know, that was put off by past, you know, past situations or, you know, what you hear word of mouth, that scares some motherfuckers, you know. You hear a motherfucker that hung a nigga off a balcony, or you hear a motherfucker that had motherfuckers' asses whooped in a private room, in the red room, or niggas hear stories. Mm-hmm. So, and especially at the executive level, that scared the shit out of motherfuckers. When niggas got to the point to where they start walking in labels and offices with baseball bats and ready to beat motherfuckers' ass over records and songs played, that changed a lot of era for motherfuckers.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, though, MZA made it cool for everybody to come to the station, though. Because you just didn't extend that treatment to Suge.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, A, because you was on priority around that time, 97, right?
98.
I guarantee you, if somebody could have connected y'all to, just took the time, just did their job and just said, hey, Aid is coming out with a record, because that album, you had some joints that could have played on Power.
Yeah, we kind of switched it up a little bit when I got to priority through Mac-10, through Who Bangin'. So,
was that the Mark Benish era?
I think Mark was there.
Yeah.
It was a few dudes there at priority at the time when Mac-10 had Who Bangin'.
And Master P was the same thing. I mean, he had that aura or whatever of, you know, don't fuck with him. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, the thing was, is like, because Mark Benish was a big influence on me. And he taught me just kind of how to deal with people. You know what I mean? He's like, you're going to experience this. And he actually put me in a room with P and Boz to see if they could intimidate me, kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I was just like, If it is what it is.
Yeah, that's the one thing I could say about you is that you definitely was fucking with everybody. That's why when Nate told me he had met you, I was like shocked.
Yeah.
That let me know the priority just dropped the ball like a motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then like I said, I was, I've never been a nigga who quest for, you know, that type of shit. You know, and there's people out there, you know, like, oh, we need to get with the program director and we need to do this and we need, you know, managers and all that shit. I never had that. You get me?
Yeah, because see, that ain't necessarily your job. To I go, was the you type. Know what I'm saying?
But and on Who Banging, I mean, I had such a great relationship with Mac 10. I'm just surprised that.
Yeah, because I didn't. Again, I've always been sort of a lone wolf type of motherfucking artist. Yeah. when the work is done at the studio, nigga, I'm out of here and I'm going on the other side of the motherfucking planet and. You probably ain't gonna see me until it's time to do something. I wasn't a nigga who just hung out. Like, a lot of people, you know, were active in the community. We gonna go to concerts, we gonna go. I never did that shit.
Yeah, I would never see 8 around.
Yeah, I never was around.
That's why we never met.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't that hangout type of guy.
I didn't do the clubs, I didn't do the radio station functions, the powers and the big concerts. I didn't do that shit.
Well, I told you when we first came in, me and him was sitting here talking, and we was talking about you. And I said, man, to be honest with you, I love doing this show with 8 because 8 is really no nonsense. Like, you always go know what it is with him. It ain't no ulterior motives. It ain't no bullshit. He go tell you what he think on his mind, and that's it. And I told him, I said, well, man, the first year we did the show, I said, man, I might talk to 8 5 minutes outside the show every week. And I was kind of worried. I ain't gonna lie. I can say it now. I was like, man, this dude don't talk. I said, how are we going to do this show together?
Yeah.
Especially when all the other stuff started coming up. And then once he got he a dude that trust is earned with him. You have to earn your way in with him. He's not going to give you the Hollywood political phony shit. He's just going to give it to you raw and uncut.
Yeah, it's enough niggas for that. It's enough niggas to play that position. I'm not going to play that position. So, you just have to know what it is, man. I'm a simple motherfucker, but like you said, I don't like to bullshit around because there's a lot of, when you've been in this radio music shit, man, you see a lot of fucking bullshit.
Yep.
And you see a lot of motherfuckers that you think are one way. Motherfuckers really ain't authentic, man. You know, some niggas is cutthroat. Some niggas don't give a fuck about shit. And so, that make you really, you know, you got to stand with your back against the wall and just watch motherfuckers coming. You feel me?
With him saying that, Miz, you was in a real pivotal time, man. It was dangerous. It's still dangerous on the West Coast, but it was dangerous as a motherfucker back
then. Oh, yeah.
Especially if you had something that somebody wanted. And as soon as somebody see you, they just see, man, this dude can change my life. He could play my record. They're not knowing how the industry worked. He can play my records 100 times a day if he want to. And you guys have a playlist, correct? There's a playlist, and that playlist is based on research that they actually do call out and see if what people are fucking with. So they got to play with that because the average person that listens to radio, and this is some game out there for y'all rappers that think that radio is hating on y'all because I had to go get educated on it. It's based on what call out says, correct?
Mm-hmm.
If ain't nobody, if there's no demand for your record, ain't no demand for it. And the average motherfucker that listen to radio only listen to it for 15 minutes at a time. Am I correct? Is it 15 minutes?
Yeah.
They only listen to it for 15 minutes at a time. So what they're trying to do when people wonder why they're hearing the same damn record all the time is because that record shows test good and call out, and they're trying to catch it. So when 8 get in his car driving back to BFE, they can hear the records, the hit records that they like, and make their trip pleasant.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah, in 15 minutes, you want to have, like, the hottest record in the world, the one classic that makes you go, oh, wow, and one that's, like, either coming down or coming up kind of thing. So, I mean, you want to keep people's attention as long as possible. You're fighting for quarter hours is really what it is, mm-hmm. the 15 minutes. And the more 15 minutes you get, the higher the ratings go. Mm-hmm. So every 15 minutes, a million people would tune in, but how long did they stay? And my thing was, yeah, the records were one thing, but we were what I was trying to get was the passion records. You know, All About You, you know, Ain't No Fun, all the records that were never on the radio before that would make people go, oh shit, that's on the radio. You know what I mean? Because I was just a fan of it. So that's what I wanted to hear on the radio, the shit that I never heard on the radio before.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep Tight Stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's dope, and it actually worked. Now, did you ever have those moments? Because like I said, it was a real dangerous era.
Oh, fuck yes.
Did you, something that you can talk about, what's the most trip, what artist really just tripped you out?
What artist?
Or art, anybody, manager, whoever.
Well, I mean, I've had, you know, people pull out guns. I've had people offer money. I've had rappers that I did favors for and they didn't understand why I did it, offer me guns, bring me backpacks and hear them clank. And it's like, you know, it's like, that's not what I'm doing this for. If it was right for my radio station, I fucking did it. Mm-hmm.
So you
never... I mean, how long did I spend with you, Steel? I mean, explaining everything.
Man, he broke it down to me. You know, I was artist. I was young at one time, everybody, you know.
All right.
And so I'm an artist. And so I'm like everybody else. I'm kind of ignorant at that time. Because you know how you, in that young mode, you think everybody hating on you, right? So I came up there with the intention of not liking this motherfucker. He's stopping me from getting what I need. Once he broke it down to me, I was glad he did it. Because it changed the whole way I made music. And it changed my whole direction, kind of. And I felt like a dumbass.
Well, and it only took a couple of those type of meetings before everybody kind of got it. You know what I'm saying? The dude's not an asshole. He'll either play your record if it's right for the radio station, or he'll tell you why he can't do it.
And I eventually got a record that was played. I had a couple records that was played.
I got a good story for you. Mm-hmm. The Booyah Tribe in Hawaii.
Okay, what happened with them? Was
so Suge sent the Booyah Tribe to Hawaii to disrupt the reunion with Dre and Snoop. And Snoop came out, and he's like, the Booyah Tribe's downstairs. You know, we're going to go down in this. I said, hold on, I'll take care of it. Oh, little white boy, you going to handle this? I said, don't worry about it. I got it. So I went down there, and first thing I said was, back up before I knock you out. Like, and they all looked at me like,
that's this motherfucker right
here. You know what I mean? Sure. And I said, look, I've known you guys since back in EYC, and when you guys were making EYC records on MCA, and if you guys ever want to get your records played, there's a way to do it. You guys going to come in and join the party, or... you're going to fuck up the party. Which way you want to do it? And Godfather, rest his soul, just sat there and we talked. And the next thing you know, I mean, to this day, I talk to Gotti all the time, Giant all the time, Cobra every once in a while. You know what I mean? I love those guys.
And the Booyah, that could have went bad.
Oh, it could have went real bad. But, you know, at the time, I really, you know, I just didn't give a fuck. I was the happiest night of my life. I got the concert done. You know, this kind of stuff. I wasn't going to let somebody fuck it up.
So you know,
scary though.
You knowing the history that Suge had with them, because when Dre left Death Row, that was some, you know.
Oh yeah,
it was some shit behind that. It wasn't no easy shit, you know.
Well, and he dropped the Aftermath album, and then he dropped the Firm album. So when I went on the air with the promotion, I got a call from Jimmy Iovine saying, "What are you doing? Why do I have a $250,000 bill on my desk for a producer who doesn't produce, whose label I'm just about to try to sell?" Like, he was ready to sell the label and take it into receivership or something. I mean, he's like, and a rapper I haven't seen since Death Row. You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? You're responsible for this if this shit doesn't work. And I'm like, fuck it, let's party. You're going to get a record.
And so you was responsible for putting me in to go do that record?
Well, I put them together for the show. And then when they clicked up, then the conversation started. You know, DJ Jam was really a big instrumental person in that as well. Like, I invited them both to Powerhouse first, mm-hmm. and Snoop was performing, and I somehow talked Dre into coming, and I handed him a mic, and I had Jam ready. And I, you know, when he first showed up, I switched the names on the door so that he'd walk into Snoop's dressing room thinking it was his.
Yeah, and they bumped into
each other. And that's how the conversation started.
they wound up bumping each other, man. And I know that you changed the whole dynamic of how the West Coast was getting down. I'm talking about not just in L.A. radio, but what they was doing up in the Bay.
Oh, yeah.
Because Power was so big at that time. And I remember going to that was the one good thing about that era, right? Just the concerts they used to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I got to go up there, man, because I was running with High C and them at the time. And I remember got to go up there, man, and seeing Nate Dogg just turn the whole Summer Jam out, just doing nothing but hooks.
Yeah.
It was the craziest shit ever. Nate.
My best buddies.
It was the craziest shit ever. So what do you think the hardest aspect of that job was, man, as far as you dealing with so many personalities in L.A.? Was the gang shit a big Because you was pushing gangster rap.
Oh, yeah. It was, I mean, you know, you can't deal in gangster rap without dealing with gangs. And there was some pressure and things like that at times. But, I mean, everybody, you know, if you're just cool, just explain it out. People, you know, when you said, like, there ain't no normal motherfuckers around.
Right.
Like, we was just normal motherfuckers. So if you came up and you kicked it, you realize that we're just real. It's just now radio has got this funny shit. You know, and just people in general, yeah, after the COVID and the Zoom shit and all this kind of shit, nobody fucks with anybody, so they don't communicate, and the shit gets fucked up. You know, what you were saying earlier about another thing that I'd like to just say is the storytelling and the songwriting fucking sucks these days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, I would listen to some of the stuff, I'm like, well, what the fuck would I play? You know what I mean? Because it's like you got verses that don't have nothing to do with the hooks. You have hooks that have nothing to do with the verses. You have two verses on some songs. One verse, I mean it.
You know what that is to me, man, is that.
Bad mentorship.
Yeah, bad mentorship, and nobody is actually being produced today.
Yeah.
Because what happened is you get a dude to buy a beat online, and that beat may already have a hook on it. They just think the hook sound fly. They're not going to try to write around a hook or nothing like that. They just go throw a verse, they go email it to get their homie on there, they go bug the shit out of 8, see if they can get a verse from him on there. And it's just like there's no continuity to the records anymore.
I asked a new artist, and this will blow you away. I asked a new artist the other day, has anyone ever vocal produced you? And he said, what's vocal production?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
it don't sound, you know what it is, man, today, it's like this.
Hates him.
See, hey, you know how you talk about nobody want to be the normal motherfucker? And this is the biggest thing I saw, man, because, you know, I went, after I stopped, you know, doing music, which I never really did, I got a publishing deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working as an A&R. They wound up hiring me as an A&R for the publishing company. And the biggest thing I learned is that people want to be famous, right? I would meet a lot of groups because, you know, when you could give deals, it's a headache, man. I would get people coming to the office, right? And when I first got the job, I would really entertain all that. You know what I mean? I thought it's my job, right? So I'm listening to everybody. I would meet somebody, and the manager, I'd be thinking, damn, the manager should be the rapper. He just got more of that, you know what I'm saying, the swagger. You meet the rapper is sometimes horrible, sometimes they got some good shit, they got some bad shit. So what I started doing is I started really telling motherfuckers the truth, dog. It don't make you popular, but I wouldn't go waste no more of my time. I'd tell them, man, this ain't it. This ain't it. And it would be times to where I did get some, I would be mining for gold and find some stuff. That's how I found a kid from Dallas that did ice cream paint job.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that wound up being my first platinum record, you know, because it was like I had a dude that sent some demos into some beats, right? And he had this one kid, I forget the Doro. He was making some records with this kid named Doro in his apartment down in Dallas. And so I was like, I flew him out here, and we wound up being able to do a deal, and it wound up blowing up, wound up becoming one of the biggest songs in the country.
Wow.
Wound up becoming one of the biggest things in the country. But I think there's definitely nowadays, man.
It's some selfish motherfuckers now. I'm just saying that, I mean, people just don't give people shots like that.
Well, you know what? I didn't know no better back then. That shit giving people shots eventually wound up causing me my damn job.
I did that shit all day.
You feel what I'm saying? So, Miz, I know you hold. I mean,
yeah, but the times was different. Yeah. You get me? Giving a motherfucker a shot back in our time was a motherfucker who was really, you know, going to a studio and getting molded and crafted and being able to follow niggas like 8 or Snoop or Dre or the forefathers before him.
You said the key word, craft.
I mean, today motherfuckers are just trendy. They want to do whatever is trendy or whatever they feel is going to get them a lot of clicks or a lot of streams. And, you know, I can go buy me a $100,000 chain. And, you know, a lot of niggas, you know, the subject matters became one-sided. Nigga, I'm talking about hustling some money, popping some pills, and fucking some bitches. And the younger generation got a hold of that And it was like, oh, we finna run with this shit. Fuck it. Nigga, money, my Bentley, my Rolls, nigga, we pour or whatever we drinking, and yo bitch or yo nigga. You get me? That's what rap became. Like you said, there was no substance. You get me?
Yeah.
Motherfuckers might hate on a Run DMC or Slick Rick and shit, but you
those
get
were
me?
Songs.
And that's the difference today. I said motherfuckers don't. Yeah, you can rap, motherfucker, but can you make a song?
Well, you know the biggest thing you said though, eight, is that you stayed in your own lane. That was one of the things I respected about certain. I got a certain group of artists that I hold up there like as the kind of like the pantheon. It's Scarface.
Yeah.
It's MC8. It's Kool G Rap. And it's kind of like a toss up between them other two. I got like probably like two or three more. It's the dude from the Roots. What's my boy?
Black Thought.
Black Thought. Mm-hmm. Black Thought from the Roots. I got Crooked Eye up there, you know, to esteem the certain people that I don't want to hear commercial stuff from. I just want to hear them do what they do. You feel what I mean? Do you think that in this era, it seems like guys like that can kind of flourish? Do you think it's actually a need for radio nowadays?
I think radio is all fucked up. I think it hasn't evolved. You know what I mean? As it stands right now, it's the only media that has not made the jump to the phone. There's no app. It's not, you know, iHeart needs to be completely, the redundant costs in iHeart is what's killing iHeart. I mean, they spend, what, $8 billion to make two, you know, some weird stuff like that. I mean, there's ways to evolve it, and it just hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, you just go get me and eight just fucked off.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good, man, but that's what we do. We talk. We don't do no censorship.
Sorry.
No,
you tell the truth. We don't censor nothing, man, because
But I've always thought differently. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but, you know, I mean, I made gangster rap the pop. I know what works and what doesn't.
Because being from L.A., right, me and Glasses had this conversation all the time. Glasses, you know, on the West Coast, gangbanging is a part of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what it is. You know, when I first came out here, I found out I had certain friends who's, like uncles, mama, everybody from the same neighborhood. They were always from the same, you know, it's like a family tradition almost, right?
Right.
And you would never know because you look at this dude's mom, like nice older lady, and she used to be, you know, she from the hood though.
Yeah.
She from the neighborhood. And Glasses told me one day it's almost impossible for someone from LA to make it as a rapper that don't belong to somewhere. And he said, that's why you see so many people that's not necessarily hood orientated, but they've latched on to somebody or somebody don't latch on to them and now they kind of claiming that hood. But it's almost on some acting shit.
Well, rap is a street-based artist expression thing. I mean, it comes from that. So if it's not organic from that and people don't co-sign it and say what he's saying is real and accurate, then it doesn't grow. And that's where radio is fucked up right now, is all these programmers and everybody, they don't have any connection to the street. They don't have little homies. They don't have all of these things around them to where they can hear what's coming up. You know, they're just figuring out right now there's a lefty gunplay. Well, 8 months ago, Bams was listening to Lefty Gunplay, and I could have told you that shit was a hit.
Well, you know, even
you know what I mean?
Like, even what they doing with the Chicano brothers now, right? With the Mexican homies, yeah. Right? They want to have a representation up there, but it's none of it is authentic. Everything is so plastic and phony to where they almost go get the saccharine version of this. I'm going to go get the saccharine version of that. And I think it's a travesty, dog. Outside of Big Boy, there are no other black people in radio. Not in L.A., unless I'm missing something.
Well, I mean, the head... Oh, go ahead.
I question that a lot, too. To be a place where the... And like I said, not to be discriminating against the SAs or the Asians or whoever participates in this thing we call hip-hop. But it was a foundational... it was a black foundation for hip hop when it started here with K-Day, Greg Mack. Like you said, Uncle Jam's Army. That was the foundation of West Coast music. And it's crazy that out of all these decades of great black hip hop artists, that we don't have but Big Boy on the radio representing, especially for a place like K-Day.
And you know what's funny about it though, Big Boy is the face, right? He's the face. He don't really break no records. As crazy as that sound, am I correct?
Well, but the head of the iHeart out here is Doc. Mm-hmm. And Doc is black.
Yeah, I know that, but a lot of people don't know that. What I'm talking about is people that you can actually see.
Oh, okay. I don't know if artists have access to Doc or not.
You know, people that you can actually see. And the average person out here that ain't in the business probably don't even know who the fuck Doc is. Shout out to Doc. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But, exactly.
But they probably don't know who he is. What I'm talking about, man, and even for the, because I can't speak for the Mexican people, right? But even for them, there's so many dope-ass Mexican artists that don't get played because they're giving them a saccharine version of it. I even think that the shit that Kool-Aid had back in the day was dope.
Pocos Pero Locos.
Pocos Pero Locos shit. That shit was dope because it was authentic. It was real, right?
Yeah.
And to be real with you, I don't even know why we got to have classifications of shit like that. Just put music out there. I think once you start classifying shit as something, that's when you open up the room for bullshit. How come? Because I'm pretty sure, because I got a lot of SA partner rappers like you do too, eight, right?
Definitely.
I guarantee you, if you hit Mr. Criminal, Lefty Gunplay, that they want to be identified as just a rapper. Let me just be a rapper. Why they got to be the Mexican rapper?
Man, you're going to get me started on a whole...
Man, let's get started. What I got you up here for, keep it real.
You know, you said something.
But I think
being honest, my man?
But I think that, I don't, like I said, I think they, you know, sometimes they want to be identified as, you know, like, I don't know if just saying I'm a rapper, because just saying I'm a rapper, like, that puts you in the category of all the other sorry motherfuckers who ain't rapping good. That, to me, puts you in a, you know, like, we representing our... You get me?
And that's dope. Ain't nothing wrong with... See, I'm not talking about the cultural representation, right?
Right.
I'm talking about just the whole thing, right? We just only go play y'all in this time slot or during this thing. I think it's dope. I remember when Lil Rob came with Summer Nights.
Look.
That was a smash record across every motherfucking thing. It was, I didn't give a fuck who you was. You couldn't hate on that record.
Yeah, I did that one. I brought it. I broke that one.
Yeah. That's what I mean, though. But you feel
Our
what I'm saying?
Fingers brought that to me.
But you feel what I'm saying, though?
Yeah,
it's like... Let's just have it somehow, because to me, I'm not talking about the cultural thing. I think you're supposed to represent your culture. I'm with Larasa, you know?
Right.
I'm with all that shit, but...
Eight hit it on the head. It was when we started this thing, or back then, it was for the love of the music, and it was the craft, and it was... It wasn't the biggest thing in the world, so all of these white executives and Wall Street and all that kind of stuff weren't in our mix. Now all these publicly traded companies own all the radio stations, own all the record companies. The liquor company Seagram's, when they bought Universal, was the beginning of the end of music people in music. Mm. It became corporate. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, now you've got all these white executives running radio that have been living off what we did 20 years ago. You know what I mean? And the gas tank is empty.
And that's what I mean right there. But you just said it right there.
You know what I mean?
It's time. I don't got nothing against Jimmy Steele.
Hit the
But it's time for them to go. After a while, man. Change is always necessary, Mizzen. Change is always necessary.
But does it happen, though?
No. What happens
when you have somebody in that position, just like with everything, you get me? Of course, change should happen, and there should be more black NFL football coaches, and there should be, but at the end of the day, does it really?
It don't happen.
If budget cuts, it ain't going to be Jimmy Steele.
And I'm going to tell you this.
It's going to be the talent.
And I'm going to tell you this right here, right? I don't give a fuck if a motherfucker is black, green, or whatever. As long as they from the culture, bro. As long as a motherfucker is at least from the culture to have enough common sense to say, okay, I'm going to play this Lil Rob record. Okay, I'm going to invite Suge up to the, you know, just shit that's common sense. Because when you're not from culture, you're not from the culture, you're not going to exercise shit in common sense.
When back in my days, when Kid Frost came out, I didn't go, oh, nigga, that's a Mexican rapper. I just went that nigga hard.
That's what I'm saying.
Cypress Hill came out. I didn't go, oh, some essay niggas from Multimoon. I said, man, that shit is hard. You get, so to me, it's all about the music you put out. Whether you black, whether you whatever, shit, you can be white. I mean, shit, if you just put out some good, hard, decent shit, we don't categorize it as, oh, that's a white motherfucker, or that's a black motherfucker, or them niggas is, niggas go, nigga, that record hard as a motherfucker. You, that's what I go. Yeah. Now, if shit is mediocre, it's just mediocre.
Let me ask you this.
You can't do shit about that.
Where is
but
Doc
there is
from?
A double standard, though.
Definitely.
There is a double standard, trust me.
Oh, speak on it.
Well, I mean, because it's like, you know, the way that the game works sometimes is the people that end up, that you end up helping and they get into these positions, they'll turn around and hate on you. You know what I mean?
There's
like,
a whole lot of that
to
shit.
Try to like hold on to their little spot, but you're not a threat to them. You put them there. You don't want to destroy their brand. You want to help them. They're not doing well. It's like, let me help you. No, you're a threat to me because you're going to bring someone new in. Because I was new and you put me on. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to revitalize your brand, not fuck you up.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recently, Power just let go Philly Fail go, yeah. Right? Philly Fail has been around almost since the beginning.
Yeah.
Did you bring Philly in?
No, Jimmy brought him in, but I'm the one that hooked him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He was coming from Texas, and he had some second thoughts, and Jimmy had me call him, and
Philly, you know, and you look at stuff like that. Philly was a dude that was at that radio station for 20 years.
And the way they fired him was fucked up.
20 years, man. And you know, Philly
didn't even let him finish his show, grab a box, and we're going to walk you out shit.
You know, the thing with Philly, Philly had a love. You know, Philly helped people. Piss people off too. You ain't gonna be able to make everybody happy, but for the most part,
I piss people off every day.
Yeah, but for the most part, Philly was a good dude. And if you brought him a record that he liked, he was gonna try to break it. He was gonna break it. Philly helped break a couple of my records. But the thing is, just to do a motherfucker like that, dog, that has been around you so long, like, hey, how would you feel if you showed up to this motherfucker one day, right? And I didn't call you, or nobody calls you to take you out to lunch, and you just show up here and you just gone.
They're like, really, that's it. The ride is over.
You got to treat motherfuckers better than that, though, dog.
You expect for motherfuckers to treat people better than that, but in this shrewd world of money and business and there's somebody above you, I mean, some motherfuckers just ain't going to give you the motherfucking dignity you deserve. You mm-hmm. get me?
And this is Hollywood.
Yeah, we
you know what I mean? People
acting for funny. That shit all day. Niggas been doing shit for 20, 30 years, and we still trying to get respect from motherfuckers to be considered. Like, nigga, I'm just like you. Don't.
That's all you want is decency. Just don't, be treated decent.
You
just
know.
Treat me with respect and don't lie to me.
Because, see, I'm not mad about the thing about him getting fired. That's just business, right? But to me, especially if motherfucker, like, if it's a dude that's been up there for 6 months, you don't know if he gonna cuss everybody out on the air or whatever like that. Somebody like Philly, give him a chance to say bye.
And he's a good guy. You know he's not going to do some bullshit. But you pull him off the air before the end of his shift and start. I mean, dude, it's obvious that Morello, God bless him, is being fooled by these people. You know what I mean? The consultants and all this kind of stuff. Because how do you tank all of these stations and still have a job?
They're trying to keep their check going.
That's what I'm saying.
They're trying to keep their check going. You know, and I don't want to stay on color all night, man, because it's not important.
Right.
When do you think they decided to where this is how we go roll with things?
In what context?
Like, you know, with these consultants that you talk about that actually run the station, right?
When I left.
I've never known no business to operate in that pretense to where if you're not getting the numbers, everything's supposed to be based off analytics, right?
Right.
If you're a rapper, you're not selling no records, they will tell you, hey, man, it's right here. And the last two albums don't tank.
Definitely.
Numbers don't lie, people do.
Mm-hmm. Everything should be based off analytics. If you're holding your shit down, you keep your job. Everybody happy. If you're not holding it down, you got to go. It ain't nothing personal. It's just what it is, right?
100%.
It's just what it is, so.
And you go down for 20 years, And everybody is, they don't have a program director. Everybody has refused the job. Why? Because they don't want to work with those three motherfuckers that are in charge. You know what I mean?
Like, don't they have somebody over them?
I mean, the owner of the station, but they, obviously haven't got the picture that there's something rotten in, your trash can and it's starting to smell.
Yeah, you had a lot of motherfuckers hating on you, too.
Oh, they still do.
You had a whole bunch of, and you came
out. I'm finding that out.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I remember, I didn't know you did the Shady Sites record at first. And that was a smash record.
People got fucked up about that is Shady Sites was signed to MS Broadcasting. And the first $1 million check was not to 50 Cent. It was to MS Broadcasting for Shade Sheist.
Oh, so Shade was actually signed to the radio station?
Was signed to the radio station. It was my job to do it.
Oh, wow. You opened up. We breaking news on here now. You remember that record, Abe?
Yeah, I remember that.
Where I Want to Be, I produced it. But it was MS's artist.
Oh, okay. So
when it all hell broke loose, they threw it on me. Yeah, they were supposed to play the records, but I went through FCC. That's why I never got busted, because I went through FCC attorneys and knew corporate was going to fuck me at some point.
Let me ask you this. How do a motherfucker get signed to the radio station? That's some shit, ain't it?
Yeah, that's...
Well, what happened... Well, it's kind of a long story, but, Shade was a friend of mine, and I played a demo of it. They said, because of the ratings and all this kind of stuff, and they saw me producing records from Mariah Carey and all these other people, they said, we want some of that money. So produce some records for us, and we'll play the records. We'll give you a salary. So I got $1 million deal out of the gate for them. And they didn't play the records. Power played the records, but not their other stations.
You think that was because they was hating, huh?
Oh, hell yes.
They'd have been better off
doing that shit. And then they sent me to those stations to fix them when they fucked up.
So you had to go down there and tell them, because that was a big ass record.
They sent me to Hot 97 to fix Hot 97 when Lil' Kim shot it up, and then they had the game thing. They had Jay-Z going to Power 105 and the Breakfast Club and all this kind of stuff. Who do you think they sent to New York?
You had to go out there and hold it down.
I had to go pull Jay-Z off the competition. I had to go clean up the Atlantic Lil' Kim mess, and do all of that. Because people didn't look, it's the same thing now that it was then. They didn't know the people to have the conversation to squash the shit.
Yeah, you got a relationship with everybody. And how did you start producing for Mariah Carey?
She came into the station one night and we just hit it off. And she just asked, what else I do? I said, oh, I've been making beats. She said, let me hear some. And then she heard that Willy Wonka shit and said, oh, that can be the remix for I Still Believe. And that's how that started.
That's how that started. And you had actually pretty good friendship with her, too.
Yeah, we were cool.
He said, we was cool.
Y'all was cool. Just give me that smile.
He said, we was cool.
Miss, you smiling like you hit that or something.
She's my friend.
You smiling like you tapped that ass, man. Didn't
she was a wonderful person.
She's a wonderful person, though. She's a bad motherfucker. Nick Cannon ever have any beef with you over her?
Oh, no. Huh? I have nothing against Nick. Nick, I'm glad they had a good run.
They had a good, man. You produced on some big-ass records, man, and you was fucking with everybody at that time, man.
It was fun.
I mean, everybody. So and with the Shade Shy shit, man, that's a trip. You never find out the truth about shit that later on was everybody and their mama swore up and down that was you that did that deal.
You know what, dude? What's fucked up is I get blamed for a lot of shit, and people take the credit for a lot of shit that I did. You know what I mean? I just never felt like, I just stayed quiet. Like with you, you never address beef.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, throughout your career, you have been a gentleman about that shit. Like, you just try to stay out the fray.
I mean, because motherfuckers are going to have their opinions, and, my beef thing went as far as it did over really just neighborhood gang shit. Mm-hmm. And then once I was able to, I ain't like on that page. I ain't riding around in the hood with the strap, with the rag out my pocket. I done went from that to a different level. So once that happened, like, well, I beef with niggas. Beef for what? Like,
Yeah, it shouldn't be especially.
So I just wouldn't address it.
Especially in some rap shit.
Especially like, at this time.
No beef with no rap nigga. You get me?
Especially at this time. And you know what, Miz? It's almost like you was just born to do radio. You've been working in the radio since you was 12 years old?
Yeah.
How the fuck do a 12-year-old kid get a job, eh?
Very shit. Carefully.
shit, I was a 14, 15-year-old kid hanging around, you know, got introduced to a nigga who was a beat maker and a DJ at clubs, and he took me and Chill under his wing, nigga, and we was young niggas going to club. I mean, we was starting our rap career.
Mm-hmm. But that was mentorship.
But exactly. Nigga, we go to the clubs, nigga, and we was too young to get in. But shit, nigga, we still be hiding out behind the DJs because we get there early, unload the trucks with the crates and all the records. And so by the time the club get to going, nigga, we already in that motherfucker.
And that was the same, you know, check this out, though. But the same producer that you... took you under his wing as a little kid, you used the remainder of your career pretty much.
Oh yeah, man. Slip did 90% of my production throughout my MCHC MDub career.
Loyalty.
That's just like
mentorship, loyalty. Keep going, eh?
Slip was a nigga who was he was there. He was known LA Sound Control Mob. He knew Lonzo, Unknown. His pops had a business where they supplied all the speakers for all the concerts at World on Wheels or the convention center and shit. So when I got introduced to Slip, he was already in the world of hip hop. You know, he was a producer. He had done a lot of techno records. And he was a DJ.
And he was looking at shows.
He DJed clubs like Water the Bush, Paradise, all that type of shit. I got to hang out at shit like that as a young kid.
And they got coached the fuck up. That's why they sound was polished.
Trying to transition from, because nigga, I was still in the hood, you know. But
you're soaking up game.
That is what made me go, oh, instead of catching the bus to the hood today, I'm going to catch the bus over here to Gardena and go chill with them niggas. They had a full track in the studio and nothing but a gang of speakers and DJ equipment. To me, I was fascinated by that shit.
And you were staying out the way.
Yeah.
It didn't mean shit when we was up at 3 o'clock in the morning wrapping up chords and shit. And then we stop at Tommy Burgers downtown LA and slip by everybody burgers and shit. Like, to me, nigga, that shit was everything. And I was a young kid. Didn't want to go to school. Cool. None of that shit. Hey,
same shit.
Miz, you know, some of this business we talking, that's a movie I want to do, dog.
Sure.
I want to do that. I want to do the CM Dub story. And I'm really on my, one of my missions for 2024 back, I'll share something with y'all. And it just kind of just hit me again last week. You know, I was in the hospital last week. I talked to you. We supposed to do this interview last week. We supposed to start the season up last week. I couldn't even physically call Aiden and them and tell them I wasn't coming. I was so bad, I had to, you know, shoot a text out and say, man, like, I can't do it. You know, I'm in the hospital. But it made me realize we need to take control of our own stories, man. And we need to tell our own stories so people not written out of history, because a story should be written from a factual standpoint. Like, when they wrote, like, if somebody ever writes a story about the Gangsta Chronicles, I want every part of it told, the good, the bad, you know, like everything.
Exactly. Well, part of the reason or how I've just can't come back on social media. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, I've hit about a million people. And how I did it was I was watching the, what's that, Dr. Dre movie with Jimmy Iovine? Mm-hmm. The, whatever, I forgot the name of it, but whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they were telling the story.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they were talking.
The defiant ones.
Yeah, the defiant ones. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, shit, that's how that happened?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, they sure missing a lot of shit. You know
what
I mean?
I'm saying. People have a tendency to rewrite history.
Rewriting the narrative.
Right.
And what keeps rap legendary has always been the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's a story. You know what I mean? What you're saying about the beginning, middle, and end. Well, what they do is cut out everybody else and say, we did this ourselves. so that they can keep the narrative on themselves. They're not going to tell you that Jimmy called me and said, hey, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Don't do this. You know what I mean? But what would have happened to Dre's career if I would have taken that call?
Exactly.
Where would Dre and Snoop be right now? Probably think still, how much people made so much money off of that. How many jobs did that create?
Exactly. Now, you think about Dr. Dre, right? How many artists he don't work with that he just don't work with no more, and they wherever they at. I don't know their personal relationships or whatever like that, but they could have stayed not talking to each other.
And that was the thing. He said, when I first went to him and said, would you work with Snoop again? Well, I just haven't talked to him in a long time, but I'll put that motherfucker back on. And then Snoop said the exact same thing about Dre. So I just put him in the room together. Because it always comes down to some ego shit. This Hollywood bullshit of, oh, I love you, I love you, oh, but I won't return your call. Because I don't want to have...
It's that bullshit.
It's that bullshit. Because they're guilty. They feel guilty because you did so much shit for them. They don't know how to say thank you. But they're being assholes. So do I say sorry? Do I say I love you? You know what I mean? Like, and it turns into some bullshit. And it's just like, get over it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not here for that shit. Let's work. Let's get some shit done. Hip-hop's fucked up.
For real.
A lot of that goes back to, again, the egos of the walks of life that you walk came from. You know, niggas feeling like, you know, I gotta represent a certain gangsterism or hardness to as something as simple with, yeah, tell that nigga to call me. You get me?
Mm-hmm. It's, or I wonder, like, how he's doing. Let me give him a call.
You know, really, it'd be just the ego of, really, our downfall was really because of something else outside of, it was nothing really personal, so.
Well, you know, we all make mistakes. We all say stupid shit. We all do dumb things sometimes, but, you know, it is what it is.
Definitely.
Get over it. You know what I mean? Like, I know I have. Shit.
Yeah, let me ask you this. I have a question, man, from the audience. You and Nocturnal, y'all had an affair. You was taking care of Nocturnal.
Nocturnal is a good friend of mine to this day.
That skit at the beginning of the West Side Connection, that was a joke, wasn't it?
Yes, I was the fucking producer. I could have muted it.
Yeah.
He can't smoke none of my weed, drink none of my hand. Fuck the Mizza. I was a producer. I could have hit mute. I thought it was funny. He said, take it out. We were actually testing the mic. That was the first take. And I just kept it.
Yeah, you know what? I forgot about that record. Miz, you got some production credits like a motherfucker.
Hell yeah, play.
And I'm going to tell y'all now.
I'm not trying to brag or nothing, Nate.
Definitely.
Them placements didn't have nothing to do with him, his position up at Power either, because I think at that point you was gone already, wasn't you?
Well, I mean, it was before, during, and after. You know, I was always doing that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but when I was doing radio, that, you know, they said I couldn't do production. You know what I mean? I even put out Cruising and I rapped on it. You know what I mean? Like, God, they hated that one. You know what I mean? But it's like, who gives a fuck? This is hip hop.
Yeah, you should be.
We're all just having fun.
Why was the masses upset that you were producing records? Because they were getting played?
Play your position.
Like, I don't understand that. Just like, okay, I'm the program director or whatever, but.
That's not fair. You have too much power.
I produce. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, and the thing is,
that's just like, you know,
it's hating.
That's just like, you know, we got the show, and then I turn around and go, well, shit, I'm gonna go do me a show. And the next thing you know, I start getting calls from you know, other motherfuckers, like, oh, you can't do your own show. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, shit. I would love it. Hey, who's the one to be telling you that you need to be doing a show?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like,
well, when you stop doing for them and you do for yourself, then they say, wait a minute, that's my spot.
Okay, so they wanted the records, or they wanted those records.
Yes.
Like, but you see, they wanted the piece of that shade.
Y'all, so, well, I could see.
Well, look at the shade I
could
see, thing.
I could see their sabotaging ways with, you know, we got a program director who's going out here producing all these records for Shade Shice and Mariah and so-and-so, and they're not our records.
And you didn't clear them through us.
Why would I have to clear
that's, that's them? A control.
When I'm the one to put them on.
I'm not, I'm a program director here. I'm not signed to you as an artist or producer. Right. So, but I could see the workings of that. You get me? Jealous motherfuckers and haters are gonna hate because, okay, this nigga working for us as a radio programmer, but he's got hit records out here on other late, and to them, they feeling like, well, we want to get into that game. So why aren't you bringing those records here?
Yeah.
And you could still bring them the $1 million check, and they still going to hate on you.
And trust and believe in what I know about artists. Ain't no artists out there. I don't give a fuck who you is. Ain't no artists, not no major artists. Ain't nobody go fuck up their reputation, their project, their career, over just saying, well, I'm going to get a radio dude with a beat. And, you know, get a beat from the radio dude, hopefully he play it. Because then, none of, believe me, Mariah Carey didn't need Joel for nothing at that time.
No, and you know, but that's what was so great about Power 106 and all of the power that we had was we were kind of A&Ring the records, too. Like, I put Jay-Z and Mariah Carey together, which helped Jay-Z get into, you know, the Philippines and other markets. And I introduced him to Eminem, and I gave him The Watcher Part 2. I think I pretty much introduced him to Dre. Like, you know, I mean, at the powerhouses. You know what I mean? Like,
man, I don't know you for a long time. How come you ain't never told me none of this shit? You just a humble motherfucker, huh?
Well, I mean, it's...
A lot of people don't like...
It was my job. I never looked at it as anything fucking special.
And then I don't want motherfuckers to think that I'm trying to use that as a status or stepping stone. A lot of shit just be kept quiet because people look at shit differently.
Yeah, for
you
real.
You know? I gotta keep shit quiet sometimes because, like you said, once motherfuckers find out, some motherfuckers turn envious and
that's
like
crazy.
Shit.
And envious a motherfucker. Hey, Miz, let me ask you, because you never
or motherfucker,
you're not married, are you?
Or motherfucker gonna call you a liar. Yeah, right, nigga. Yeah, right. You did. Sure, you did. Sure, you introduced so and so to whatever. You know,
by you being a single man, and you being around all of these fine-ass artists, man, these females, man. How much pussy did you get? How much superstar pussy did you get back?
How much are I still getting? You know, when Dr. Dre said, I'm not done spending NWA money, apply it.
So, man, it just ain't, it ain't too much, it ain't too much that can excite you then, huh?
Nah, man. You know, when you've seen it all and done it all, it's just kind of like, You kind of just, and you know, the amount of bullshit that I had to deal with and I still deal with, it's like, yo, like, keep it.
Man, I just.
Because they're always after something. There's nobody that's just your friend. You know what I mean? People that say, oh, I'm your friend. I love you. Da 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 da. Yeah, motherfucker, you ain't called me. And you know what I mean? Like, when my grandma died, it was like, yeah, you know, we'll post all this stuff on Instagram, but I won't call you. You know what I mean? Like, the real ones picked up the phone and called and said,
This is a treacherous game. And if you have been able to withstand a lot of the potholes in the road on your journey, once you get to a part of the road where for you it's smooth, I'm cool. I don't want to pick up no hitchhikers. Mm-mm. I don't want to stop and look at no new cars. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, oh, man, I could do this. My shit running fine. It's smooth selling, and I don't want no detours. You get me?
Yep.
I don't need to try to take the high road to get there faster. Mm-mm. You get me? At this point, I'm on cruise control, and I can just sit back because nigga done seen so much bullshit and had to dodge so many curves and obstacles. And then, you know, motherfuckers say they gonna, you know what I'm saying? And next thing you know, you stop at a nigga's gas station for some repairs. And nigga done took your rims off.
Yeah, they'll rob you right there.
You pull off your shit, you're making a noise right now and backfiring and shit. So, nigga, when you take that long journey and you get to a point to where, nigga, right now, nigga, I'm cruising.
Well, you know the biggest thing I don't experience, Dave, is you could be everybody's best friend. Mm-mm. I'm going to tell you a powerful word. The first time you say, as long as you're saying, oh, yeah, I could do it, no matter how much it's hurting you, No matter, if people don't give a fuck about the rest, it may be putting you under. As long as you keep saying yeah to them, the moment you say no, you ain't shit. That's when you find out how they really feel about you.
You know what? Let me ask you a question. And Steele, you saw it. How many people did I make rich?
Made a whole bunch of motherfuckers very wealthy.
I haven't heard from nobody since I left Power 106. Not one person.
Nobody. Let me ask
except for Ja Rule and Irv Gotti. They're people from my own coast don't even give me the credit. But Irv Gotti and Ja Rule, every time they're on Drink Champs, anything like that, they mention me. Thank you for doing what you did.
That's crazy, man.
Isn't that nutty?
That's real but crazy.
That's what he's saying. Is they'll be your friend when you can do something. They're not your friend when you do whatever.
And it'll be motherfuckers right in your own backyard who want. Yeah.
It's always the closest to you.
Let me ask you this, man.
Hell yes.
You got into the radio game when you were 12 years old, right? As a 12-year-old kid from Oxnard, did you ever imagine? Santa Barbara. As a 12-year-old kid. As a 12-year-old kid from Santa Barbara, did you ever imagine that you would have the career that you the stuff that you've done?
Hell no. Dude, when I saw that I was number 4 in the Source Power 30, I shit myself. Like, I was like, there's no way this is me. Like, this is Source Magazine. Like, there's no way. When I read the review of Nate Dogg's Music in Me, the title track, I was just like, there's no way. Like, there's just, who are you right now?
And you did it, man.
You're living your dream. You know, it's.
You did it. So you look, I'll go back. That tripped me out. So you and E-Man don't talk all the time?
No.
With all the history.
You want to talk about the number one hater on the planet is E-Man.
E-Man, for those that don't know,
he's been saying shit for years, but God bless him.
Yeah, E-Man is the associate PD? He's the director?
Well, I don't want to get into that. But yeah, whatever.
Do you ever think we'll see you back on Power or radio?
Not with the people that are running it now.
What would it take for you to come back?
Either buy that motherfucker or gut it. I tell you this, I'd make that motherfucker number one faster than you could shake a stick at it.
Oh, for sure. Well, We about to shut this down, but yeah. Nate got some other stuff to talk to you about, man. We appreciate you guys tuning in with us this evening.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeartMedia Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.